Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Welcome to Off the Post. I'm Russ Cohen. We have Anthony Mangione. Ant, how are you?
Doing good, Russell. How are you?
Real good, real good. We've got Michael Jello as well. Mike?
Gentlemen, good evening, and I'm just recovering from that deep dish pizza.
Well, you know, it takes a while to move through your system. It's sort of the same way when a snake swallows a rat. It takes that snake a while to, you know, digest that rat. Same thing with a pizza of that magnitude.
Good analogy there, Russ.
Okay, I appreciate it. So, on the eve of the trade deadline, we're starting to see, like, the...
It's not a trade deadline, Russell. Russell, not a trade deadline.
It's a trade deadline. I don't care what you say. It's free agency, but there's all kinds of trades and everything
Russell
else.
Russell's punchy tonight.
It's fine. I'm punchy, but we're still seeing trades, so, like, whatever you want to call it. It's free agency.
Free agency. Come on. You go with my title. Free Agency Eve Edition.
Yes,
it
I know.
Off the tongue so well. Come on.
I don't want to ruin it. You're
I worked hard
and,
for that one. Come
okay.
on.
And just to let you know, from the western side of Pennsylvania, Mr. Brian Metzer has joined the show.
There you go.
Outstanding. Mess.
Metz, how are you?
Good. How about you, boys?
Doing good. Doing good.
Doing good, sir.
So here's the first GM quote that we'll have some fun with. Of course, if you prod a GM long enough and talk to them about offer sheets long enough, you'll get a quote like this from Peter Chiarelli telling Darren Dreger, "We have tons of cap space and we'll match any offer sheet." I've said that before. It's like, if anybody here believes there will be an offer sheet tomorrow, chime in now, because I don't believe there will be.
Nope.
Yeah.
There won't be.
I'll find a Bigfoot in Crawford County before that'll happen.
Well, apparently Rob Lowe found a Bigfoot and did a big story in Newsday. So there is that. So maybe they're coming your way, Matt.
Yeah, but it wasn't Bigfoot. It was Judd Nelson who hadn't cut his hair.
Well, you know, I say that because there are actual Bigfoot hunters descending upon Crawford County, Pennsylvania, because somebody said they saw a Bigfoot. And some guy who's been hunting Bigfoot for 50 years, and I think they have a TV show and all this crap. They're live and screaming here in the state looking for our Brent Burns or whoever it's going to be.
Okay, well, look,
yeah.
I watched Finding Bigfoot. So if those are the guys, they're just as unsuccessful as everybody else looking for.
Well,
for
there's
Bigfoot.
Also the one added thing to the Rob Lowe thing. They said they described the animal as being a quote wood ape, which I immediately said, oh, my goodness, we have the new Seattle expansion franchise name.
Wood Ape.
Seattle Wood Ape. just to bring it back to hockey here and Chiarelli, Peter, the problem is that, yes, you can manage to match Leon Draisaitl's offer sheet if it ever does come, which it won't. But the problem is you won't be able to do anything else, and that's what, like, a team like Calgary or a team in their division could cripple them by signing Draisaitl for like 7 years and $70 million. That's the whole point. And I'm surprised.
Sure, but the minute they do that, they look at Calgary's next contract and they do it to them. It just doesn't make sense.
Right, exactly.
Well, Brian Burke is in Calgary. He wants to fight people in barns over offer sheets.
That could
happen. And now he's in proximity now. So
I can't say that's an impossibility. But, all right, so – even though we're on the eve of free agency, we still hear about Matt Duchene getting traded. I am going to go out on a limb now and say Matt Duchene will not be traded. If anybody has a good trade scenario for Matt Duchene, we'll go around the horn here, starting with Anthony and ending with Mets. Go ahead, Ant.
The one that seemed to have a lot of credence to me was the Columbus trade, especially if they're going to include Ryan Murray in the deal coming back the other way. But there's got to be more involved in order to get, I think, to get Sakic to move. He's got to make – if he's going to move him, that to me seems to me the most realistic where the needs are matched for both franchises. So that, to me, I think Columbus is a decent chance here.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't see the – because it was Nashville and it was Columbus. I don't see Nashville panning out unless Nashville goes out and trades for a defenseman and then is free – to trade one of the four that they have, but I think the likelihood of that is remote. So, yeah, Columbus, I mean, it would have to be probably on top of Murray, somebody like a Sonny Milano, like Milano, And if it was that, if that was that type of deal, then I think that's at least respectable enough. But that assumes a little much, because has Joe Sakic made any kind of respectable deal? No.
Mets?
Yeah, you know what? I think that that's probably, based on what you're hearing, a decent landing spot for him. But at the same time, I don't know that Joe Sakic really wants to trade him. He's been doing this dance now, going all the way back to the trade deadline last season. And you know he's probably had his socks knocked off with some pretty outstanding offers. I'm sure people have come calling with first-round draft picks. They've come with prospects. And unless he gets somebody like like a Seth Jones, that's the kind of deal it sounds like he wants to make. And there's not a Seth Jones available right now. I mean, even whenever Pittsburgh was tied to it for a minute, and there's still people like, I guess, Jimmy Murphy still trying to beat the drum about the Penguins. When you hear that, they're talking about, Mata. And I don't think that Mata's a guy that's going to get that deal done either, based on the way that everybody was trying to run him out of Pittsburgh even over the last year and a half. So I don't know that it's going to happen. It seems like one of those things where Sakic is expecting the world and he's never going to get it. So Matt Duchene will end up being there and he'll be miserable and he'll, hang his head and have to play out up until the trade deadline, maybe this season or mid-season, something like that. And we'll see what ends up happening at that point.
I think he'll shake it off. I think that team will be a little better this year. But, all right, so Mets now, we're going to rotate back around with you, because I think one of the first guys off the board will be Nick Bonino going to the New York Rangers. It just sort of the Rangers have all these BU guys. He went to Avon Old Farms. You could sort of see where they need a center. I think they've got their sights set on him. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. They're a team that they're no stranger to making a big splash on free agency day, and it would be the most Rangers thing ever, especially now when they need centers. I mean, I think that's a position of need for them, and they would go out and say, all right, here's your $4 million over 4 years, and give him the big contract that he's looking for, and maybe even give him the fifth year, which would definitely lock it in, because from what I understand here in town, a number of teams have come calling for Nick Bonino. It sounded like he was going to try and find a way to stay here in Pittsburgh, but there's no way the Penguins could give him the money or term that he's looking for, right. So that's why they've pretty much closed the book on each other, and I agree. I think the Rangers are a very good landing spot for him, number of other teams being rumored, but that's what I have thought all along, that they would be the team to steal him away and to give him the big bucks and the big term, and realize after it's done that he's not really going to be a top two-line center for them, and also realize that he's probably not going to be near as productive as they would like until about February. And at that point, he will be getting run out of town by the media in New York, I would think.
Yeah.
Can I just ask Metzger a quick question? I mean,
yeah,
is there any plan in place in terms of who's going to take over Bonino's spot up the middle? Because, I don't know, this is completely unsubstantiated, but there's been some buzz about Tyler Bozak being possibly traded to Pittsburgh, and obviously we know Bozak and his connection to Kessel from Toronto. Have you heard anything, or what do you think what the Penguins are going to do for a third-line center?
Strangely enough, I mean, I've heard Bozak's name come up in conversation just locally here, people, pointing at him. I like him as a face-off guy specifically. I mean, I know his offense is always, hit or miss. I think he had a pretty good offensive season last year, but the face-off winning percentage is always there, takes a ton of them. I think he's an underrated player, and so that would be somebody that I think a lot of folks here in Pittsburgh would be comfortable with. I haven't heard a specific rumor or something to point in that direction. There was a story reported a little bit earlier tonight from Josh Yoey, our good friend, who said he talked with Rutherford, who said he has his eyes set on maybe five options via trade. We've heard just random names thrown about. There's people here even speculating about Jordan Staal at this point.
Wow.
And I know that
They
circled back on him a couple years ago and at least had a conversation. Didn't come to fruition, obviously. And I still think he makes too much money,
Matt,
to come in.
I got to say, the day that we were at the ballpark and they put up at the Pittsburgh Tribune headline, and we were at the Pirates game in between the draft, and they say Jordan Staal traded, and we heard the boos. He's never coming back.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to happen, but that's just somebody that they're kicking around. I feel like, they don't have the money to really devote to a huge name there. That's why I think
no.
It's funny when they're tied to a Duchene and they're tied to this. Bozak would be a good option. Tara Vinen's been mentioned here in Pittsburgh as somebody that maybe they've talked to Ron Francis about, but I still think he's more of a high-end guy eventually that, would be looking to be more of an offensive player than being a true 3C. But that's what they want from that line. They want somebody that can play offense as well as defense. So I think that Jim Rutherford's probably going to do something sneaky. I still keep looking at a guy like Nate Thompson as a cheap option that they could just sign in free agency and bring him in as maybe the guy to replace a Matt Cullen with a little bit upward mobility in the lineup if he can stay healthy.
All right, now, Ant, I'm going to direct at you, since the Flyers made that really good signing today, who else might they be targeting in free agency?
Do I have a gong? Can I bring a gong to this show?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. It's a gong show.
Chuck Barris?
For the Flyers right now, again, obviously the reports and everything have the Flyers linked up goaltending-wise with likely two-year deal with Brian Elliott from Calgary, which, again, they're basically treading water right now, trying to bridge the next couple of years until one of Carter Hart or Felix Sandstrom is ready to make the jump up to this level. Free agency wise, it's going to be fair. I think after the Wheel contract was done, Hextall stated today that he anticipated he might have gone into the market a little bit more had he lost Wheel. There was some discussion about Justin Williams, but he said he would have considered it. But once the Wheel contract was done, he pretty much is out on in terms of forwards right now. There may be at some point, maybe not here at the outset or so, but during the summer, they may look for a veteran defenseman, like somebody who they could potentially plug in after losing, obviously, several other veteran defensemen, including, obviously, Stanley Cup champion Mark Streit, who is obviously a big veteran influence. So in this circumstance, I think that's the way they look. I think they're going to look more at trying to bolster the AHL level. I know there's a report, several reports about Kenny Augustino, who was the AHL MVP last season, that the Flyers are looking to sign him right out from the get-go to have him on the Phantoms and have him maybe as an early possible recall as the season goes on. Also, he has a local connection as well. Augustino, he is from Morristown, New Jersey. So there's a good chance that that deal, I think, will come to fruition probably tomorrow. But I think it's going to be mostly AHL-level deals for Philly.
He's got some NHL ability still.
He does. And I think that's a case where they have injuries in the lineup, they lose some wing depth. And and the fact is he's a left wing to boot. And Philly, even after the Wheel signing, is not – their depth on the left side isn't tremendous. So if there's an injury or two, I think Augustino potentially could find himself up on the Flyers roster. But for the most part, this is an AHL. It's going to be mostly AHL level signings, unless Hextall suddenly shocks us with a deal. If he finds a taker for Matt Reed's contract, again, he's basically the 13th, 14th forward for the Flyers. Now, if you're looking at how they're handling things, and that's a big number that he has, obviously over $4 million cap hit. So that's the one area, other than an out of the blue franchise altering deal. But again, I don't think it's going to happen because, especially after the news on Nolan Patrick having surgery on June 13th to finally get to the specific problem that he had with the sports hernia. He's not going to be available for another 4 to 6 weeks, and he's going to be a little bit behind if he's going to be ending up make the roster anyway. So these are
I think this was Hextall's way of saying he's not going to make the roster because
the thing is, the message was the fact that he's going to be that he is going to be at full capacity.
I get it.
I'll be the first to say they loaded up with the trade at the draft. They are loaded up on centers at this point. Got guys playing out of position. They are prepared if they're going to send him down to Brandon. The one concern I have is where the initial diagnosis misdiagnosis happened, and whether or not the Flyers would feel more comfortable if he's closer, if they keep him here, and we'll see, it's gonna come down to how he looks in camp and everything, and if he looks good enough I think he'll make the roster.
But
it all depends on how he's recovering from this.
I'll say this, we all knew he had this surgery. I was surprised that they came out and said it today and sort of backdated it to then, because he worked out at the combine. It's not like we knew he didn't have something done, and he had to be cleared for the combine. Like, that was reported. So it is kind of weird. that, and that's why I think this was just a way of Hextall to educate the fans and also say, don't raise your expectations. That's my read on it.
We'll see. Again, yeah. We'll see. He did say at the draft, you have to remember, his quote was, no one has a lot of work to do. He has a lot of work to do this summer. So that to me is as much code of anything of if he is going to be sent down, then that would be it.
Yeah. All right. So here's some breaking news. David Poile said backup goalie Marek Mazanek will not be back. And, you know, we keep hearing that the Rangers are negotiating with Pavlik. I got to tell you, I'd go right to Mazanek over Pavlik in a heartbeat to back up Lundqvist. I think that would be a better signing. I don't mind Pavlik, don't get me wrong, but I just think he has just been so inconsistent, and Mazanek with a pretty good defense has shown to be pretty good. Anybody disagree with this?
No, he's a good player. I mean, a couple years ago, if not for Saros coming along, he probably wouldn't have been expendable at this point. He was looked at as the guy, right, that it was going to be there to be the backup and maybe even take over eventually.
I'm not
the biggest fan of Mazanek. I've seen him play a couple times. I know he played against, I think he played against the Leafs earlier in the season, and he got smoked. So I think the Rangers can do better than that. I mean, we know Pavlik had an up and down last couple years in Winnipeg, and they've moved on to Hullabuck. But in a number two role, playing 25 games a year, I'd trust Pavlik more than I would Mazanek.
Okay. So let's bring up Steve Mason for the Winnipeg Jets. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good signing. Excuse me. I don't think the expectations will be through the roof. I think Hellebuck could still be the number one or at least be competing for the job. And if he were to lose it temporarily, I don't think it would kill them. I don't know if this makes Winnipeg a guaranteed playoff team either. So Ant, what do you think about Mason and Winnipeg?
Well, it's going to be an interesting spot for him, certainly coming from Philadelphia to Winnipeg. In terms of, again, the defense that's playing in front of him, I think Winnipeg's D, to a man at least, from last year going into the – and obviously comparing it to how Philly's defense is going to look somewhat different, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But Philly's defense has not helped, I think, Steve Mason – but at the same time, he's been up and down. He goes through stretches where he's very good, and then he's got stretches where he really struggles. And it all depends on what the contract's at, what the salary is going to be. If he's north of $3 million, then to my mind, it's not as much of a partnership as it is. He's the locked-in starter at least at the beginning of the season for the Jets. If it's less than that $3 million mark, say he's closer to what Brian Elliott is going to be making with Philadelphia reportedly, then that's more to me more of a 1A, 1B situation. But I do think probably in this circumstance, he is likely he's going to be the number one there, and Hellebuck will at least have a year as an understudy, and then they'll go from there.
Can I just say how perfect Brian Elliott going to Philadelphia is? Because for a team that for most of the last 25 years has had goaltenders who have been ridiculed by the Philadelphia fan base for not being good, and Brian Elliott's somebody who I have never thought is anything good, that's a perfect marriage. Absolutely perfect.
Like I said, they're treading water here. That's what it certainly feels like.
Mets, any thoughts on
I like Brian Elliott, so, I mean, just to follow on that thought, I mean, I don't think he's going to be the savior or anything as a bridge goaltender for the Flyers, but I think that's a decent spot for him as long as he can get semi-decent defense in front of him. I know he sort of melted down at the end of last season, but generally I think it's an okay fit until they can get to their younger guys. But on the Steve Mason front, watching him play a lot over the years, that poor kid, in my opinion, is a guy who had the worst thing ever happen to him with his rookie season. We all know how that goes, and then the expectations are through the roof, and he's still a good player. It's just he's never been able to reach those levels again. So he's also a guy, in my mind, that's good for a bad goal usually per game, but above and beyond that, he's usually pretty good. So hopefully with the defense and the team that they have available up there, as long as it's a decent fit where it's pretty much defined, and you guys just talked about that, if there's going to be a split or if he's going to go in there maybe as a guy that's going to look at to be a starter early in the season. I think as long as he doesn't have to be the guy and he can sort of be the 1B option, that should work pretty well for him. I mean, I think he's a talented player. It's just he hasn't found a good home ever since that rookie season.
All right, so, Ant, I see that McKenzie's saying maybe Patrick Sharp goes back to the Blackhawks, and I scratch my head, whatever hair is left, and say, why. At 35, the wheels are gone. He had 18 points last year. He is a minus when he steps out on the ice. At this point, are they that desperate, or are they just going to bring him in as a complete depth player?
In this circumstance, with Sharp, again, with the hip issue that he had, they're going to have to be very careful, I think, with how with his usage and what they're going to sign him to. It's one, you know, I know it's getting the band back together and everything, that mindset, but it's just I Chicago's going to need to be. It's going. I'm going to be very curious to see what this contract is going to be. If it's like a couple year deal, I'm thinking that's okay. But again, I want to see what the cap hit is, and based off of that, then I'll get an idea of how of their usage for him. That's my main concern there for Chicago.
Okay, if it's anything more than $1, Stan Bowman has lost marbles. Because he's a declining player. I know you want to bring him back, like you said, put the band back together. You know, they brought Brandon Saad back in that deal, but I just think we know Sharp has a history in Chicago, and we know that it could work. You know, him playing with Patrick Kane or playing with Taves, but I just think it's a risky proposition. It's a roll of the dice, and I don't think with their cap situation they can risk $3.5 or $4 million on a year. It's got to be something lower. So I think it'll probably be around $2 million.
I mean, you know what, guys? I mean, the thing is, a good friend of mine, I'm going to quote him here, he said to me whenever the Panarin for Saad deal happened, which they're both good players. I personally, at this point, just for the scoring upside of Panarin, would have loved to have seen him stay there. But he said it's the Blackhawks' march to mediocrity that's happening. And it's a shame because they are a very crafty organization. They've proven to be able to make something out of nothing how many times now and manage the salary cap. And now it looks like all of their trades over the years, where they've depleted the cupboards to such an extent, they've had to go back and try and rebuild what they had in the past, and all of these players aren't the same as they were then. I think Saad will still work out there. But to bring Patrick Sharp back, it's not only straight injuries. He's had concussion problems now over the last 12 months. This is a guy that's, I think, on the wrong side of his career. I mean, I still like him as a player, but I just don't know that it's going to work. You're going to try him there probably for a while as a top six forward. He's probably going to do okay for a bit. He's going to be knocked out of the lineup with an injury, and then they're going to be scrambling. So I always hate to see this because I've lived it in Pittsburgh so often over the years where either the fan base or even people in management, we got to get this guy back. We got to get that player in because he was so good during our run to a championship 7 years ago. Well, it doesn't work. I mean, it never works, and I hate to see them doing it, but it's good for the rest of the league that they will be marching to mediocrity, to quote Al Willig, my good buddy.
All right, so now we go to the David Pagnotta fourth period. Since you spoke a little longer than I thought you would, it was 32 seconds ago, which turned into 2 minutes, that Patrick Marleau, his two-year offer is 4.5 a year. I will go to Anthony first and say, I don't think anybody's topping that, and I don't think Thornton gets more than that.
No,
I'm pretty sure he's staying.
My gut has always been on this that I think both Thornton and Marleau were going to be staying in San Jose, and they're going to, again, the only thing is, again, you get that odd feeling with the Sharks here that they've already sort of reached their apex and they're about to hit a nadir here very soon.
Yeah.
So, but that being said, there is something obviously to be said for loyalty to those guys who remain productive. I was like, there was enough of a scare. I think I know LA definitely had interest in Thornton, but I think if Marleau stays put, I think it'll end up being potentially a package deal where if they get that deal done. And I agree. I don't think he's going to get a number better than that at this point. So again, we'll see certainly come tomorrow.
Mike.
I mean, Thornton and Marleau supposedly were pressing for 3 years. I thought that was a bridge too far.
Yeah.
I'm frankly surprised that Marleau, if that's truly the offer, I'm surprised he hasn't accepted it already because I didn't think he would get 4.5. I thought that Marleau and Thornton would end up splitting one of their salaries, meaning around 6.5. You know, I think they were making like 6.8 last year, so it would be like 3.5 for each. So if he's getting 4.5, I think he's staying in San Jose, and I don't think Thornton's going anywhere if Marleau stays there. There was some talk about Thornton in Toronto, Thornton in L.A., Thornton a couple other places. I don't think he wants to go to a big media market. That's why I thought all this Toronto stuff was a bunch of bunk. So if he gets the same offer, they're both staying in San Jose.
And we don't even know how his skating is at the moment. Like, again, if I were going to spend 3 years worth of money on Joe Thornton, I would make him come in for a private workout. Is that crazy? I'm telling you.
He just had ACL MCL surgery in mid April. So I don't probably think he's ready to go on the ice yet. But that's
I know that's the thing. I'd have him come in and just have him tested, you know, just to see what the doctors say his recovery looks like. And you know, you don't know. I mean, if they sign him, I'm not even sure San Jose could give him 3 years based on that. That's why 2 years. You figure a year and maybe some sort of out would make sense.
Well, he skated pretty good on the torn tendons, so who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, that was kind of a crazy thing. My only thought on that, boys, is I never liked the hold hands and skip deal where you need to have the two, you know, bring my buddy in, then I'll sign back with you too. I mean, it's kind of absurd that these two guys are going to get that kind of money for a team that was in the Stanley Cup final 2 years ago. Do you want to win? Do you not want to win? It's going to be kind of hard to ice, I think, a championship lineup around $9 million with those two players for the next two seasons. But
although the argument is Marleau with the 27 goals is the top scoring free agent out there.
Well, I buy that. I mean, I get it. But it, you know, you can be a jerk and say, well, four of those goals came in one game, so really, you know, that drops it a little bit. And then you can look at another couple, you know, multi-goal games, and then really you had these long dry spells. Because there was a point last year where they're like, is Marleau done? He doesn't look like himself. And then he suddenly had 27 goals. So it's always interesting with these guys, and it could drop off a cliff at any moment.
Yeah, I think we got Rob Rossi on the call now. That's what I think. All right. That's what it sounded like.
I would just like to see how Doug Wilson pulls off. I mean, a couple weeks ago they said that they were very close on extending Vlasic, who's entering the final year of his contract. I believe Martin Jones is entering the final year of his. How he's going to get all his ducks in a row with all those guys if he signs Thornton and Marleau for that kind of money, because I don't see where he gets the room to do it.
Yeah, just broken 4 minutes ago. Adrian Dater says his sources say the Bruins have signed Kenny Agostino 1 year, $850,000.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah, he's kind of a Bruins kind of player. He is. I watched him a lot in college. I thought he would be a pro already, like at least a part-time NHLer. So, you know what? The Bruins probably have even more space than the Flyers do, to be honest, like for a call-up.
He was once good enough to be in a package for Jerome Iginla.
Yeah. No, that's true. I mean, that's when he was really, you know, thought of as a really top prospect. So it's good. It gives him something. We'll see if that pans out, but that's already breaking now. So
do we think, since you mentioned the name of Iginla, do we think that Iginla, Doan, I mean, Andre Markov, if he doesn't sign with Montreal, he's 38 years old, but he had a really good year last year. Do we think that those players in the twilight of their careers are going to find homes, or do you think that, you know, since the trend of the league now is youth, that nobody's going to give him a chance?
Well, I'll go with Markov and say Sergei Gonchar kept getting jobs way after his effectiveness because he can move the puck on the power play, so somebody will give Markov some sort of contract.
Yeah, I would concur with that. So he's with the paucity of defensive depth in the market, Markov's going to have a solid enough reputation where he'll be able to garner that, I would think.
You know what's interesting about him is you never know. I mean, he could be a power play quarterback for somebody that really needs it. I mean, I still think he's a very talented offensive player. I've always been a fan of his game, and just along the lines of the other quote-unquote old guys, as long as they're willing to accept a role with somebody and realize you're not going to be maybe a top six forward or a number two or number three defenseman, I think there's a job for everybody still. You just got to be willing to play in a third or fourth line situation or on a bottom pair, and that's a tough pill to swallow for some of these guys sometimes.
All right, so here's an interesting thing that now Ryan Kennedy is the one reporting this, that Ilya Tovanen has not made a decision on his destination for next season. I think that's fair, considering he's not going to college. Now, Mike McMahon went over that and said he might be going for Jokerit in the KHL.
That's right. That's what I was hearing. And also,
that makes sense for him, actually. That makes a lot of sense.
And I think Tommy Cipolla also, I think,
oh,
mentioned
Tommy
that
did.
As well.
Okay.
Tommy mentioned that he was – it wasn't official, but I think that it looked like he was going to be headed – Ilya was going to be going to Yokrit.
And I do have an Ilya Kovalchuk update. And remember, when I get these updates, they're coming from Russia. So when they sound like talking in circles, this is what you get out of Ilya Kovalchuk stuff now. So basically – SKA reached out to somebody that I know saying that they have no idea what he's going to do. Like, they want him. They don't know what he's going to do. He hasn't promised anything to anybody. So that's where we're at for right before the night of the free agency. Ilya Kovalchuk, have no idea. Go ahead, Mets.
Yeah, that's just such another odd scenario for me. I mean, I loved him as a player. I think you guys did too. He was exciting
for a little while.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. Like, it was just fun. You know, he was like a fun kind of player.
Yeah.
But then his game started to crumble on him, and then he goes to Russia, and I'm going to retire. And then he suddenly pops up. We all knew what was going to happen there. So now, you know, he wants to come back now because the KHL is not so viable anymore. Maybe. I don't know. I talked to my buddy Oleg here in Pittsburgh, and he says a lot of players might start to make a mass exodus here in the not-too-distant future because of just the way things are starting to deteriorate. So to see Kovalchuk come back, that would be the first guy leading the parade. And I just think that if you want to come back, you can't tie hands then. You can't say, I'm only going to go to these handful of teams.
Yeah.
You know, you can't do a sign and trade. You got to either go back and say you're going to play for the Devils or say, okay, trade me anywhere in the league. I'm that desperate to come back. And he didn't do that. So
no.
You sort of made it very difficult on the general manager that owns his rights and himself. And I feel like he may just end up staying over there.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Ant, any thoughts?
Yeah, it's my feeling as well. I think Kovalchuk's kind of backed himself. He wants to call his shot, and he can in this circumstance. I mean, he's either going to play for Jersey. The deal's not there with New York. There's other opportunities, other places, but it's just he seems to have really sort of boxed himself in. And again, this isn't the K. He can't call his shots here. Certainly not like he did when he was younger in this circumstance. So, my gut feeling is, I don't know if he goes back to Scott St. Petersburg or not, or if he goes to, I know there was some, Scott, I mean, got with everything that we hear, someone mentioned the fact that the KHL team offered him $9 million. If he's got $9 million on the table, I don't know why he hasn't already signed it already at this point.
Well,
so
I'm
not so sure about
that. Well, it's
so
tax free over there most of the time for those guys.
True, exactly.
You know?
It's true, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, but the delivery mechanism isn't the greatest. You're getting it in a brown paper bag, so.
Hey, Mike, I think you would take $9 million in a brown paper bag, right? If someone's handing it to you, you don't got to report it. It's there. And guys like Ilya, they command that at the beginning of the season, too. They don't even got to wait for a paycheck. That's the cool thing. When you
Mike's
have that
complaining
sort of carte
about
blanche,
T.F. Chang's takeout. So I don't, think that's, I don't think that's even a question right now, Mets. I think he would take it, yeah.
Yeah.
I would take it. But let's just say this. This may show how much Ilya Kovalchuk does not want to go to Columbus. Because
right.
If, you know, say for example, Columbus is the only one who's stepping up with a 2 or 3 year deal with a reasonable amount of money, he doesn't want to go there. I mean, it's clear that he probably wants to go to a big market, probably, you know, the Rangers or maybe the Islanders.
Well, that's what I was saying. It seemed like JD was sort of like making it a PR ploy as almost to sort of get him to be interested in Columbus. And this is Ilya Kovalchuk. Like, you know, getting him to be interested in anything is hard.
Yeah, he wouldn't be the first Russian to snub a smaller market team because apparently Alexei Emelin negated a trade to go to Winnipeg, and he's in Vegas right now. He'd rather stay in Vegas and play for a team that's going to probably finish 31st overall than play for Winnipeg, who probably finished 26th overall.
All right, so now there's 2 minutes ago, Eric Stevens out of Anaheim said the Ducks are indeed trying to get Miller, and they're going to try and keep Cam Fowler long-term. I mean, to me, the Fowler long-term makes sense because he's their power play guy. I don't care who else you have in the pipeline. He is the best guy you're going to have for that. And if you really do want to win the Stanley Cup, you really can't afford to lose him. Now, as far as Miller, I still will go back on record and saying I don't know how easily he's going to want to be a backup, or I think he is going to compete with Gibson for that job, and I don't know if that's going to be a great thing. But anyhow, that's my thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, my thought on that is at this point of Ryan Miller's career, I know what you're saying, Russ, but there's always so many opportunities in this circumstance. And again, I don't necessarily think it's bad necessarily to have if he's still that hard charging and not necessarily accepting of the fact that he is the backup to Gibson, then again, that's I look at it as a test of character for Gibson as much as anything. You know, if he,
sure,
that's competition. That's the way it goes. So, you know, I would, if I'm Anaheim, I don't hesitate. I think Miller makes more than a solid backup in this case.
Mike, before you answer this, just remember, Brett Favre wants to make a comeback too. So once these guys, you know, get a taste of it, they don't know how to give it up as far as being a star. Go ahead.
Brian Miller accepting a 1-year deal for $1 million, which was the report from a couple days ago, is him accepting the role as a backup. $1 million is barely enough to pay for the bungalow that him and his wife will be staying at in Manhattan Beach. So he wants, I think that's, he's going there because he'll be closer to his wife and may have a chance of being a backup on a Stanley Cup winner.
I feel like he's going to maybe take that deal.
Oh. Wait, Metz, before you answer, I want to correct on the Brett Favre. He says either as a coach or an executive, but based on the commercials he does for, like, that nose hair trimmer, I don't know if he has it in him. But go ahead, Metz.
The copper sleeve and all that stuff, too. Whatever. It's good for the joints or the old. But I feel like if he takes that $1 million deal, it's going to be – a lot of performance incentives in there that if he does take over, he's going to make himself some cash. And with John Gibson, I mean, I've watched him a long time. He's from my city here, and he has those mental lapses. And one day he can be a Vezina candidate. The next day he looks like he can't stop a puck. And if that happens, Ryan Miller is going to be there in front of a pretty good-looking team, I think, where he could maybe harness some of his past abilities and become a guy that's not going to relinquish that job very quickly. So that's going to be a very unique circumstance. And like Ant said, he's definitely going to have to show, talking about Gibson, some character and some maturity to deal with that, because I don't know that he had to deal with it so much last year with Bernier. I know he had a good run, but Ryan Miller's not Jonathan Bernier. He's a guy with some pedigree, and I think he could steal that job from him pretty easily.
All right, now here's the final one I'm going to do. I'm going to throw a bone to J.D. Burke, maybe the best-dressed guy at the draft. He really works hard on his hair. He really is a guy that loves his tattoos. He just broke that the Canucks are re-signing Anton Roden to a 1-year deal. Good job, J.D. Ant, anything to add to that?
Not particularly, no.
Oh, you're just mean. You're just
no, Roden's actually. I'm joking. It's a solid pack. There's like $700,000 on a one-way pack, I think. But again, it's a solid swing guy, I think, in this circumstance to have in their lineup, flexible. So I know he's 26 years old, but again, it's Vancouver right now, and they're having, you know, they're trying to parse together as much of a roster as they can at the moment. There's some really they're the definition of a team that's really in transition right now, and I think there's some good elements that are on the way, but they're kind of in between.
Well, all I know is for a team that is supposed to be rebuilding, if the moves that have been rumored are going to happen with the Canucks, I know that, you know, Anders Nielsen, backup goaltender, they're supposedly going to sign Sam Gagne, and there was one other move. They're not acting like a rebuilding team. They're acting like a team that thinks they're going to contend for a playoff spot, and that mindset has screwed that organization for the last couple of years. And I thought that when they made the Yannick Hansen deal and the Alex Burrows deal, that they finally came to grips with the fact that that team was not good enough, but they keep going back to the well, and I think it's mostly the ownership who is clueless there.
All right, I got one more. I lied. Now this one is coming from Brian Compton, who I guess when he's not looking for McRibs does report NHL content. And on this one, he is saying he expects Gar Snow to do nothing tomorrow. Nothing. And if he does that, then he will prove my point that they are on the self-imposed salary cap and what you see is what you get, which I'm going to go with Mets first. As an Islander fan, would you be happy with that?
Absolutely not. I think that they're going to be pretty peeved, and I think you're also going to anger your captain and make him definitely take his contract negotiation to July 1st next year, because if he doesn't see some signs of life and that you're trying to build a winner and get him some players to play with, I think that you know, that's not going to be a guy that's going to be too pleased. So I tend to agree, though, but that also sounds like an Islanders fan that's a little bit angry, because I know a lot of the people that are based in New York, surprisingly, are they can't often shield their love for either the Rangers or the Islanders, because it seems like they are definitely there and going to a ton of those games. I know I always had these talks with Pete Jensen. So he's pretty peeved about what goes on the island as well, or at the Barclays Center. So I think that they might do something, but it's not going to be near what their fan base definitely would love to see.
Mike?
The Hamonic deal and the deal with Strome and Eberle, that was a wash monetarily. And then they make the trade with Vegas and they clear Grabowski's contract. That cleared up, I think, almost $5 million. So they have $5 million more than they did about 2 weeks ago. And if Garth Snow does nothing, and it has to be that ownership has put the clamps on him. And honestly, I think that's the invitation to John Tavares walking next July. And I think he will if it stays that way.
Yeah, I would concur. They're walking a dangerous line here if they don't make some kind of an upgrade in this offseason. I mean, they're gonna have some space. They have to. Again, it's the signal as much. You can't just turn around and say, "Hey, we got Jordan Eberle for you." That's not going to be enough in this circumstance. Which is one of the reasons why this whole situation with them not being a bit more in the race for Matt Duchene kind of surprised me. I figured they were a perfect fit. They have exactly the type of player in Hamonic that I felt that that Colorado would be interested in. And then they sent him off. Then they sent him off to Calgary. And for picks, and granted, those are assets, but that's not enough to get, you know, to get Sack to move on that. So again, Garth's got to do some work here. And you're right. If what Brian's saying is true, and it seems like they're putting the clamps down, and they're preparing, then they're.
Well, I'm saying I'm putting the clamps down. He's just saying these things. Don't be quiet.
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't see
you. Russ Cohen saying that.
That was Russ's. Contribution there. Okay.
I don't believe anything that guy says.
That was your moment of being possessed by Rob Rossi.
It was. And we're going to end it there. We do thank Brian Metzer for coming on from Parts Unknown, and Mets will definitely see that you'll be going to a lot of heavy metal concerts and probably some slasher conventions too.
I will say, because it seems like every time I join you boys, I have a show upcoming, and I will be going to Megadeth on July 11th. So
shocking.
You're right.
Absolutely shocking.
They were actually just in town, Megadeth. They were at the Fillmore down here in Philly.
I might have a meet and greet lined up with Dave Mustaine too, so I can pick on him about being a Nashville Predators fan.
Oh, there you go. And I will join your fantasy league. I keep forgetting.
Please do. I want to get the draft going. So
I'll have to do that this weekend. And we thank everybody for listening this season. We'll come back once more to talk about rookie camp and stuff and maybe some of these other deals. Who knows when? I don't know when. But that's it.
Sometime soon.
We're done tonight.
All right. Take care, everybody.
Thanks, guys.